south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Now, I'd like to point out that after getting a number of emails asking me about my new Latin American healthcare report just off the presses, and by the way, it has a long title. It's called An Expat's Guide to First World Healthcare in Latin America, with the subtitle being How to Get 21st Century Healthcare for 80 to 90% less than what you're paying in the States right now. It's a long title, but it says it all now, doesn't it? And how to get that report for free right now? You just go to expatwisdom.com, and on the main page to the right, it says Sign Up for Your Free Reports Now. And that's all you have to do, and you'll get an email with the link. Do check it out. Oh, and people have been asking me if there's any Expat Eddie stories in the report. Well, there are a few stories, all right. I can barely get through a simple conversation without telling one. You know me. But to answer the question, there are no Eddie stories in that report. But as for Expat Eddie in healthcare, well, guess what? He's thinking about getting a facelift. And not because he's old, ugly, saggy, or baggy or anything. And he's far from being vain. But his girlfriend, you know, is half his age, and she makes fun of his papada de pavo, which means double chin. Actually, papada de pavo is literally translated as turkey chin. You can picture that, can't you? He's on the low side of 50, and he's been smoking an awful long time. So he's got those permanent telltale smoker's wrinkles around his mouth as well. And to me, he's just expat Eddie, so I never noticed that stuff. Until his girlfriend pointed it out, you know? Oh, and by the way, she made him quit smoking a long time ago. And it was a really hard sell, since cigarettes down here go for about $1.50 to $2 a pack. So is Eddie really going to get a facelift? Well, you see, it's getting a bit complicated now, because the other day in the car, she asked me in front of Eddie if I thought he could do for a facelift or not. Then I said, well, let's see how he recovers from that liver transplant first. Then Eddie said, yuck, yuck. No, seriously, she's trying to talk me into getting a facelift. She doesn't like my turkey gobbler. Then I said, you going to do it? To which he said, I'll do it if you do it. I said, maybe, but I've got to grow a double chin first. Una papada de pavo, a turkey gobbler. So that's where we left it for now. Don't worry, I'll keep you posted. And by the way, in my new healthcare report, I do talk quite a bit about medical tourism and all kinds of elective and non-elective surgery in Latin America, too. So if you're wondering what it's like, the cost, the quality, and how to find excellent English-speaking surgeons, etc., etc., pick up the report at expatwisdom.com. Anyway, for those of you expat wannabes who might be coming down with young kids, I'd like to talk just a little bit more about schools down here. Now, a while back I gave you the complete lowdown on private schools for kids K through 12. I mentioned that if parents have the money, they can send their kids to private schools that range in cost from the ridiculously low price of $25 per month per kid to the very elite high-end schools, which could top out at around $300 a month. And the way it works out, only about the upper 10% of Latin American families can afford to send their kids to private schools. Though 100% of Latin parents would just love to send their kids to private schools if they could afford it. And it turns out 90% of Latin American families can't even afford that rock bottom price of $25 a month. Now, if you're a parent, you might be wondering, what do you get for $25 a month in a private school here? Well, first of all, the school itself is not likely to be a traditional schoolhouse. It's going to be a converted home, a lower middle class, rough around the edges, paint peeling, ceiling dripping middle class home. And many of these places have the owner and the family living right next door, or even in the same building. Meaning often, the kids in the one-room class can smell the beans cooking and hear the TV blaring right through an adjacent door. And it's usually the owner of the house, the lady of the house, that decided one day to start a little private school like that. In most cases, the lady of the house was a disgruntled public school teacher who just couldn't take that cesspool anymore and decided to strike out on her own. So the question is, how does someone with a bit of initiative and almost no money start a tiny private school like that? Well, if you tried that up in the States, it would take reams of paperwork, hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions, and dozens of licensing hurdles to jump over. But down here in Latin America, starting a school is so easy and cheap that it's laughable. You do have to fill out some paperwork and fulfill some very basic and rudimentary licensing requirements to get a permit from the education department. And there might be an inspection of the place, though there might not. And you'll have to submit a curriculum, though that might not be a strict requirement either. Anyway, you get the idea. As it turns out, a lot of upper-middle-class Latin ladies with a lot of time on their hands end up starting little schools like this that are pretty successful. And believe it or not, gringos and Europeans do it all the time. Now, you could say it's a good job opportunity for a gringo, and I don't mean working at one of these places. I mean actually owning and operating one. Of course, you'll have to be able to speak some Spanish just to get the thing off the ground, but you can start very small, with bare-bones capital. Most of these places start with just a handful of students. 20, 30, 50, it doesn't matter. You gotta start somewhere, right? And work up from there. I mean, basically, that's how all gringo and European-affiliated schools started down here, with just a few kids, and some of them, after 10 or 20 years, have 300 or 400 or 500 kids, and they end up growing quickly out of their first little neighborhood houses and buildings, and they bought land and have full-fledged campuses now. And remember, with that gringo advantage, you've got instant credibility and perceived first-world know-how and teaching skills, whether you have them or not. Like I said in past shows, it's every Latin parent's dream to have his kids trained by first-world gringos or Europeans. So what I'm saying is this. If you're a first-world teacher, it would be very easy for you to come down here and start up your own private school. And of course, you wouldn't be charging 25 bucks a month per kid. What you're offering is a first-world education, or something pretty close to it anyway. In fact, many times a first-world expat with some teaching experience up north will come down and hook up with a Spanish-speaking Latin American teacher down here. And the two together will partner up and start one of these little schools. The first-world teacher, of course, lending to the project first-world prestige and the startup money. Because I can guarantee you the Latin teacher is going to be flat broke. They all are, because the average teacher down here makes 250 to 300 bucks a month. But the Latin half of the partnership will be the boots-on-the-ground connection to the neighborhood, thus recruiting kids and teachers and dealing with the initial curriculum and government paperwork and stuff. But first, let me give you an idea what these very low-budget $25 to $50 a month per student places are like, to give you some idea what your competition is. And by the way, why you just can't help but succeed, like so many gringo and gringa teachers have done. And let me just mention that you just don't come down here as a teacher and decide to start a school. You work a while yourself as an English teacher, 6 months or a year, working at a high-end private school yourself, just to get the hang of the way things are done in one of these bigger places. Then you do what some of my own gringo teacher friends have done, and you hook up with some other teacher in that school, and you partner up and you go off on your own. That way there's very little stress and you're not reinventing the wheel. So anyway, what's your low-end competition going to be like? Well, first of all, it's likely to be a converted lower-middle-class home right in your neighborhood, so a kid can walk back and forth to the school easily, so they don't have to deal with any kind of school lunch program or food at all. And what about the staff? Well, you see, the rules are so lax for starting a school down here that, believe it or not, none of the teachers needs to have a 4-year university degree. Or, for that matter, a teaching certificate. Not for teaching grade school kids, anyway. In fact, most public universities in Latin America, the ones that churn out grade school teachers, actually do it with 2- and 3-year university programs. Now, in these very low-end private schools, there will be no gringo or European teachers. The teachers will all be Latin Americans. And yes, even those low-end schools will have English classes, but the kids will never learn their English well enough to communicate with you or me, since the Latin person teaching the English class will certainly have never been to America before and will have learned his own English teaching skills from another Latin teacher he had who never went to the States either. In other words, English teachers in those schools have no practical conversational English experience at all. But their curriculum will offer English, and that's why a real first-world English-speaking teacher who starts up even the tiniest neighborhood school immediately has a huge PR advantage over the local competition when the parents, paying the bill, realize their kids can have an actual gringo education taught by a gringo or two in their very neighborhood. Now, again, remember I'm talking about doing this off the gringo tourist trail. Because if you're not, and you're in a place like Costa Rica, countries on the tourist trail like that are just flooded with gringos and English speakers. And if you open a school there, you will have no gringo advantage at all. And in-your-face gringo competition is the last thing you want. Now, when you're off the tourist trail like me and expat Eddie, You really do stand out as the only gringo in your neighborhood. In fact, even now, when I drive up to Expat Eddie's subdivision in El Salvador, there are different guard shifts at the entrance gate. And the guard will always ask you who you're there to see, and then they'll call ahead to the house you're going to visit to make sure you're invited or are expected. That's why these guarded subdivisions are so safe. Anyway, sometimes when I drive up to the guard station at the gate, there's a new guard there or a guard that I don't know. And sometimes there'll be two guards there, one outside by the gate and one inside the little guard shack watching a soccer game or a soap opera. Now, just a couple of weeks ago, when I was outside the entrance to Eddie's subdivision, the guard standing outside, who I didn't know, walked up to the car and asked me who I was there to see. And before I could say anything, the other guard yelled out the little guard shack window, La Casa del Gringo, telling his fellow guard in Spanish, it's okay, he's going to the gringo's house. The other guy recognized me and just waved me through. Now, Eddie's in a big subdivision of at least 200 houses, yet he's the only gringo in the whole subdivision. So he's known by the guards and the people in the subdivision as the gringo. The lone gringo. So you gotta know he's way off the tourist trail. And like I've said before, when you're in that situation, you're kind of a B-grade rock star. In fact, oftentimes when I drive up to a guarded subdivision like that, for whatever reason, to meet someone or to go to someone's house, oftentimes the guard will see I'm a gringo and just let me go right in without identification or asking which house I'm going to or anything. Something they'll never do when a Latin guy pulls up to the gate. It's just that when we're off the tourist trail, we get kind of a free pass. And you know, I could talk about this till I'm blue in the face, but you really have to be down here to experience it yourself. So basically what I'm saying is that Gringo Advantage also applies to gringo teachers that come down here to start their own little schools. Now, of course, gringo teachers who have started their own little schools are not competing with these big, monster, high-end schools for the Latin American megabucks crowd with helicopters. Those schools already exist down here in the big metropolitan areas especially, and you'll never be able to compete with them. But you wouldn't want to anyway. You can make a nice little niche and make some good money setting one up in a small, middle-class neighborhood. So what about those high-end schools for the very rich? We should mention them for a second. And the chances are, if you come down here and you want to teach English, that's one of the schools you just might be teaching at. There are always job openings, and they've got a lot of gringo and European teachers working there. In fact, down here, they put ads in the classifieds in English all the time. They do have somewhat of a turnover. Now, at the very high end, where a parent pays $200 to $300 a month per kid, you might remember that I said every city in Latin America over 20,000 people has at least one of these high-end schools, and some of the bigger cities have literally dozens of them. And as it turns out, those high-end schools like that are run by first-world gringos and Europeans. They landed down here as expats decades ago and started out small with just a handful of students, just like you will do. And as they grew, they realized that upper-end Latin families would pay pretty much anything to get their kids in a school where the teachers were first-world Europeans or gringos, or at least a good percentage of them were first-worlders. That's why, for example, if you go to any big Latin American city, let's say with a million or so people, if you look in the Yellow Pages, yes, they still have Yellow Pages here, in the private school section, you'll see names like the Austrian school, the American school, the British school, the French school, the Belgian school, Montessori, and quite a few others claiming European or American connections. And really, it's all in the marketing because, for example, there's a very successful high-end English academy that's franchised itself out in many Latin American countries called Academia Europero, which means the European Language Academy. And guess what? I know the people who own and run that place, and they're 100% Latin American. None of them come from Europe, but just by picking that name, the European Academy, and marketing it in their ads with 100% first world looking blonde blue-eyed people, they've convinced many upscale Latin families that if you want to learn English, that's the place to go. You see what I mean? It's that gringo first world advantage, or in this case, European first world advantage. So again, these so-called big buck high-end private grade schools do have a completely bilingual curriculum, along with great big, wonderful first-world style campuses, and even nicely groomed sitting areas in the parking lot for the bodyguards to hang out, while they wait for their rich little brat charges to come out at the end of the day. Now, like I said, every parent wants to send their kid to a private school, without exception, but 90% can't afford it, so they send their kids to public school. It's public school or nothing, since homeschooling is not on the radar yet down here. Though it is an option, And you'd have no problem if you wanted to homeschool your own kids. The government wouldn't care. And since there are no truant officers in Latin America, no one's got a very good handle on how many kids are going to school and how many school-age kids are in the unofficial workforce as child labor. And as a matter of fact, judging by all the little school-age scruffy kids on the street, juggling oranges, wiping windshields, breathing fire, selling candy, and just plain begging, I'd estimate that maybe 10% of all school-age kids don't go at all. They just go out and try to earn money to keep the family in food. And of course, I'm talking about the very poor here. Anyway, in regards to homeschooling, I've personally never met any Latin American family, rich or poor, that homeschools their kids. In fact, upscale Latins don't even know what the concept is. And believe me, I don't even think there's going to be a lag time for that. It's just not going to come. And why do I think that? Because upscale educated Latin parents who would have the means and the knowledge to homeschool their kids would just never have the patience or tolerance for it. From day one, they hand over their kids to maids and nannies. That's just the way it is down here. Upscale parents don't do any of the dirty work. God knows. They spend very limited time with their kids and would never have the time or the patience to homeschool anyone. In fact, I know a lot of children of wealthy Latins who are adults now. All of them were brought up by maids and nannies, and more than one of these guys has even told me he was much closer to his maid than his own mother. And one such 20-something Latin girl that I know told me that she cried for 2 months when her mother fired her nanny for stealing, and that nanny took care of her for the first 7 years of her life. So, Latins homeschooling their kids? That's not going to happen. However, I do know a few expat gringo families down here who homeschool their kids. And if they've got the time, good for them. Like I said, when you're down here, you'll have a lot of time on your hands and you will need a hobby or three. Now, the funny thing is, over the years, I've gotten a few emails from people saying, Johnny, you know, the public school systems in Latin America can't be 100% crap. We all know, for example, that the public schools in Cleveland and Chicago are absolute vomitous feces in every way. But we also know that some public schools, like the ones in New Hampshire, Alaska, and in very upscale neighborhoods in California and other places throughout the states, they can be absolutely first-rate in every way. So I have to assume that's pretty much the same way in Latin America. The public school system is mostly crap, but there are some outstanding examples. A few islands in the cesspool. Well, let me answer you guys and gals who've been sending me emails like that by asking, what drug are you on? Now, the reason why I bring this up is because recently, a United Nations Educational Committee came down to study public schools in Latin America. They did a thorough analysis of the public schools in Bolivia, Colombia, El Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala, Nicaragua, and Peru. Now, remember, I'm talking about public schools, you know, the ones run by the government. And after I tell you some of the results of this report, which, by the way, just came out this week, you will understand why every single Latin American parent wants to send his kids to private school. So here's some of the results. For those 8 Latin American countries I just mentioned that were in that UN study, only 65% of them have running water. 25% of those schools do not have electricity wired at all. And get this, 30% of all the public schools in those countries do not have bathrooms, which means basically that kids have to go outside and find a place to do it, boys and girls. And you know they're not taking a long walk, especially during the rainy season. And by the way, what kind of shoes do you wear when you're doing that thing in the rainy season? Yuck. Which might help to explain why so many middle and lower class males will just whip it out any time and take a whiz, no matter what the traffic's like on the road. No matter who's there watching, without any shame or embarrassment at all. Maybe it's because nature's always been their personal bathroom. Oh, and here's an interesting Latin public school tidbit. The 2 Latin American countries in the study that have the highest public school attendance figures by far are Guatemala and El Salvador. In those 2 countries, over 95% of the eligible kids show up every day. Whereas in the other 6 of the 8 Latin countries studied, only about 50 to 65% of the eligible kids show up to school on a regular basis. I'm talking about those free public schools, of course. And the reason for that is simple. El Salvador and Guatemala are the only 2 of the 8 that provide a free breakfast or lunch for the kids. Makes sense, huh? And on a personal note, you all know I've been down here 20 plus years now. And in that span of time, I've run into dozens, if not hundreds, of successful Latin entrepreneurs and professionals. Architects, engineers, doctors, restaurant owners, car dealers, you name it. I've personally met a Latin person or two who are making a pretty good go of it. And when I have gotten into discussions with these guys and asked them to tell me a bit of their personal story, that is, how they got started and how they got into the business and what their educational background was, well, unfortunately, I can't ever remember one of these guys or gals telling me that he went to a government public school as a kid. That is, spending their whole young life in a public school, K through 12. And the few successful Latins that I spoke to that did go to public school only went for a couple of years until their parents were able to switch them into a private school. And a lucky thing for them, too. And the ones that did go a few years to public school seem totally embarrassed about it. Now, I have met some very successful Latin businessmen who went to those real high-end schools because their mommies and daddies were rich. And to be honest with you, the vast majority of these guys wouldn't be worth a damn if they weren't backed up by mommy and daddy's dough. They always end up in mommy or daddy's business, or the family money opens some other doors, provided they don't want to work at their daddy's boring cement, asphalt, or beer company. Let me tell you, most of these guys are really something and hard to be around, but they do have great beach houses and good parties. But I've met a lot of successful Latins that came from humble beginnings and really made something of themselves without any help from anyone, especially not the government. But even these guys and gals somehow ended up going to private grade school or high school. A lot of them, by the way, attending one of those $25 a month jobs, which is a very low-end private school, but still private. And what do you get for that $25 a month? Electricity 24/7, running water, and indoor plumbing. So the sad truth is, kids going to public school down here in Latin America don't have even a half-assed chance of pulling themselves up by the bootstraps and getting out of that wicked cycle of poverty. And that's why when I'm sitting around with a bunch of expat gringos or first-world tourists and the subject of grinding poverty comes up, and everybody's got their ideas on how to fix it, of course. And the gringos that trumpet their ideas the loudest are the ones that happen to have been down here the shortest period of time. Doesn't that figure? Anyway, anytime one of these first world idiots tells me about this great charity or telethon for poor kids he's contributing to, or this great new church or United Nations charity program, I tell him, you know, the best thing you could do for a poor kid down here is to try to help at least one kid get out of the public school system. I mean, come on, can you afford $25 a month or so to give a poor kid in your neighborhood or maybe even your cleaning lady or your gardener's kid half a chance at getting a leg up in life? Forget about giving your money to any charity. That's dough down the toilet. And I don't care what those people working for or invested in those charities say, or how many millions of posters they put out with emaciated children on them. I'll debate them anytime, any place. And I'll show them how they're just a bunch of corrupt scammers. First, by asking them what kind of car they drive and who's paying for it. Then I'll ask them what Caribbean resort they had their last executive fundraising meeting at, and what kind of hotels and cars they rent, and what kind of expense account they have when they're traveling around the country and the world doing charity work, God's work. Because I'll tell you, when I see executives and other spokesmen for those charities come down here to Latin America, decked out in their casual designer Outback clothes, they don't stay in the Outback. They stay at 3- and 4-star first world hotels. Sure, they'll make a trip or two to the actual charity construction site out in the bush, in a nice, comfy, leather-upholstered Range Rover. They've got to go out for a few obligatory photo ops with those indigenous families that are supposed to benefit from that sewage system, the project that their young volunteers are working on. And hopefully that sewage system will actually get used for a while. Because who knows what'll happen once those visitors have left. After those young volunteer kumbaya folks have spent their 2 weeks in the Outback, and they've packed up and gone, and are now safely back in the good old first world, all basking in that saintly glow that can only come from performing selfless deeds for Jesus and installing basic plumbing. But that doesn't mean that those indigenous folks, when left to their own devices, will actually use this stuff. That doesn't usually happen. In the long run, more than half of the projects these so-called do-gooders build end up like castles made of sand that fall into the sea eventually. And by the way, I just ripped that off from a Jimi Hendrix song. Anyway, the executives for these do-good charities, those jerks, are not going to sleep in a tent. No backpacker hotels for these guys. They're used to the high life on your tax-deductible dime, and they're not going to rough it. And that's why when I'm at a party or a get-together down here and some fresh green know-it-all gringo or expat starts to tell me about this and that great charity or non-profit organization, I cringe a bit, but I don't always bite my tongue. Sometimes when I think one of these guys deserves to learn a lesson, I'll lay some real-life close-to-home examples on them, and I'll sprinkle around some stats like the ones I just mentioned to you. And I don't know if it's a personal defect of mine, it probably is, but I kind of like telling wicked charity stories to large groups of righteous gringos. Not that it's going to stop them from coming down here to save the world with indoor plumbing, but at least it gives them something to think about. And expat Eddie thinks that someday one of those big strapping kumbaya dudes from Kansas is going to punch me in the kisser. Because after all, it's kind of depressing news if you're down here doing Buddha's work and you meet some gringo cynic at a party who tells you you're pissing in the wind. Well, that's hard news to take if you're out to save the world, you know? Especially when Plan A was digging sanitation ditches in the Nicaraguan jungle and Plan B was spring break in Cancun. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that all charities are corrupt and full of crap. Only the ones that have a board of directors, paid employees, or two or more members. Now, to be serious here a minute. Actually, I was serious about that. I believe that every single gringo and expat that comes down here should help at least one lower middle class or poor kid. And if you can, try to help the whole family. And I don't mean by buying them cell phones or iPods or Nintendo or dinner at McDonald's or any of the excess baggage first world junk that we have. I mean, do something that'll make a difference in their lives. Like I said before, if you have a cleaning lady or a maintenance guy, that's a really good place to start. And I don't think it's a good idea at all to give money to people on the street, be it a kid, a young mother, or an adult male, just because they're sticking their hand out and asking for money. I have definite rules about that, and of course I'm going to tell you. For starters, if someone on the street wants money from me, I mean, of course, coins, small change, that's what they're asking for, right? And that person has two legs and two arms and looks like he's able-bodied, I will not give him a single cent unless he's selling something. I don't care if he's selling toothpicks or chiclets or pencils. Oops, I'm pressed for time again. I'll continue this next week, so stay tuned.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture.